Welcome everyone to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee, co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, a longtime entertainment reporter, and a beautiful, beautiful person. You are just, yeah.
Long time is another word of saying old.
That's right. But do you have anything, though, to make you look younger? Any elixir out there or anything?
You know what? I did try Botox once. Oh. I'll tell you why what happened. I went to a, it was a fundraiser, and I was emceeing the fundraiser, and I noticed that nobody was bidding on the Botox. And I thought, well, that's odd. And I realized what was because nobody wanted them to know that they used Botox. So I will do it. I will, because it was $50. $50, I could make the concession, right?
Right.
So I go to the thing, and I realized after I had it done, I had no expression.
Because I am,
if you know me, I'm a person who really uses his face.
Yes.
I will do a lot of expressions, but I was like kind of held like this, and I couldn't talk like that. But I was just, it was a mask, and I thought, this is not me. As much as I might look old, I don't want to lose my ability to have that kind of flexibility.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is not on my wheelhouse. Although, look, I was willing to try it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I'm vain like that, and I would do whatever it takes to give. Now I'm age spots. I'm looking at age spots. Can we burn this thing off? I think this one needs to go. But, yeah, and so that's such an obsession. Like, now this Ozempic, Mounjaro, all those kind of weight loss drugs.
Right.
That fascinates me. Because I don't want to have to work out. I'm lazy. But I don't know what the end game is with that. You know, how does that ruin your system somehow if you're not really somebody it's meant for?
Yeah. Well, there's the other issue, too, is they're not designed to be on them forever. So once you lose your 40 pounds, right, that becomes a problem. And then you're just seesawing your weight back and forth again. So that is a problem. But
yeah, you go, I think with those, they'll do a little touch up before an award show or some big thing, so they look good for that, and then they probably go off it.
Yeah, right. But you know, speaking of good, the looks and the beauty, you did get to watch and talk with some actors from a new Ryan Murphy series, right?
And Ryan Murphy was in on this way, way, way long time ago. If you remember Nip Tuck,
yep,
which is a plastic surgery. And he, you know, he's got his finger on the pulse of what's going on in Hollywood. So he's not afraid to raise the subject. And in the beauty, they have this, I don't know if you call it an injection or what, because it involves sex too.
Right.
But you've got to... You take this, and then there are some bad consequences for the way you use it.
Mm-hmm.
You could explode. So, you know, I mean, there's that. I don't want to explode. But, yeah, I got a chance to talk to Ashton Kutcher, Jeremy Pope, and Anthony Ramos. They play three of the people who are kind of involved with this substance known as the beauty. And... Ashton plays a trillionaire who is kind of the money behind all of this. Anthony is the enforcer, or what they call the assassin.
Okay.
And so he's making sure people are toeing the mark. And then Jeremy is one of the users. In the beginning of the series, you see him as this very large man, and he becomes this kind of hunk. After taking the beauty. And I had a chance to talk to the three of them. And interestingly, Ashton has a different perspective on all of this than most people, because he was a model before he became Ashton Kutcher.
Right.
So if you want to run the interview, you'll see the three of them and they'll talk about it. And then we come back and I've got another one for you too.
Sure. It's Bruce Miller. It's the Sioux City Journal. Ashton, which business is more... looks oriented, the modeling business or the entertainment business?
I would say the modeling business is more aesthetically narrow. It is a more narrow band. Whereas like the entertainment business, when you're portraying worlds and characters and things, it takes a massive aesthetic variety. And I would say that the fashion business has a relatively narrow aesthetic that they're chasing.
So when you're dealing with relative that, terms, when you're in the modeling business, is rejection easier to take because you know that's just that they're going to cut you because of that, or is it harder?
I think there's kind of I remember modeling when I was 19 and 20 and going in the room and going, there's nothing I could have done. Like, they just don't like the way I look. But then on the other side of it, it's like, oh, they just don't like the way I look. Right. And you go, and you're constantly going like, why is that? And then in the entertainment industry, there are other variables that are at play. And so I would say that the it's harder because it's a mental warfare that you have to play with yourself, where you go, did I not get the role because I aesthetically don't look like the character that the director envisions, or did I not get the role because they don't like my performance or portrayal?
There's more to judge you on.
And sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other. Sometimes you don't get any feedback whatsoever, and so you start questioning whether it was your performance, and then you start developing insecurity. And the one thing that you can't bring to the table as a performer is insecurity. If you start by questioning yourself, you will end up down a spiral where you're thinking about what your hands are doing in a scene, and then it gets bad.
It's dicey. Yeah. Well, Anthony,
Darkhold.
Do you have a name? Did you give him a name, or is he just always the assassin?
No, he has a name, but you find out later on what his name is. But yes,
I haven't gotten that far. Okay, good. Then the eye thing, how do you hold that in your eye? Is it glued in, or how does that handle?
Well, great question. It's some double-sided thing that sticks. It sticks to the eye patch, but also...
Does it fall out ever?
No, it does not fall out. Like, I have to, like, peel it off at the end of the day. Although I do have one scene where in the scene, I had to do it without any of the sticky stuff on it because, you know, I could put it on right before we shoot, so I don't have to fake it, taking it on and off. But in that scene, I had to put it on. So I couldn't have any of the sticky stuff on it. So I just, like, you know, it was dicey. We had to kind of shoot it a couple of times because it kept falling. But eventually I got the right pocket and, you know.
You're right there. You're a pirate. That's why you.
100%. I mean, look at these sleeves.
You are so pirate. You are. Jeremy, what is it like fighting in the nude? That seems like.
What is it like? It is unmatched. And when you get to do it with your boy, whose family you, it was crazy. I mean, I know when I'm doing a Ryan project, I'm going to be asked to do some unimaginable things. You know, so yeah, fighting in the nude is pretty wild.
Well, for all of you, when you get a Ryan project, you know, it's not going to be just a simple little thing. Does he spill anything at some point and say, oh, and by the way, this is in there, or do you wait until you start it? And there you are.
For me, he gave me a heads up on the character I was playing, like the general modus operandi of the character. And that's it. And then every time you get a screenplay, you're going, what is what are you? What? Like, there were a couple of times I turned to my wife. I was like, babe, I don't, this is, I'm, and so. And then the work begins and you go, okay, I got it. I have to normalize this. Like, I have to, like, justify this. I have to make this rational. I have to make this comfortable. I have to get to the point where I can approach this and not be afraid of it. I have to get to the point where I can approach this and own it. I have to get to the point where I can approach this and justify it. And that's the fun of working on Ryan's stuff is the minute you see two dots and you're like, oh, there's a line. I can see where the trajectory goes. A dot shows up over here and that's where you're heading.
Right, right. Yeah, it looks like it's wild to do. I bet it is. But hey, thank you guys for doing it. I'm dying to find out how it all ends, but
thank you.
Maybe it doesn't. You know?
All right, come on.
Stay well. Have a good winter in Sioux City, man.
Colder than you can believe. You don't want to be here.
All right, Bruce, thanks for that interview. And then you got a chance to speak to two other cast members, correct?
The stars, yeah. Evan Peters and Rebecca Hall. And they play FBI agents who are investigating what this beauty is. I said, it's a lot like The Substance, isn't it? And well, they're very hesitant to say anything like that because Demi Moore, who used to be married to Ashton Kutcher, was the star of that. So, but they have their own take on the concept of what the beauty is and what it's like to do a Ryan Murphy project. What does this mean for them? So here's me talking to Rebecca Hall and Evan Peters. It's Bruce Miller. It's the City Journal.
Hello.
Do you speak all those languages or just the lines?
No, just the lines. I could speak a little bit of French, but I'd have trouble saying that to a French-speaking individual, for sure.
It's very impressive, I must say. When you talk to Ryan about doing a project together, does he tell you everything or does he hold back?
He'll tell you just enough to get you to sign on. He'll get you in there and get you excited and enticed. And he did tell me at the top, he said, there's going to be some very long action sequences and you'll be speaking different languages and there'll be a romance. There'll be a love story involved. And I said, sign me up. That sounds great.
Good. I'm not a serial killer. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, of course. I'm ready. Yeah.
Well, Rebecca, when you saw this all kind of unfold, how did you feel about when people are exploding and whatnot? I mean, is it scary? Because it seems creepy and it seems scary.
Does it seem creepy and scary? Yeah. Well, honestly, before I read the script, Ryan gave me a sort of breakdown of what it was about. And he described in detail the first 5 minutes of the pilot, which is pretty exact to how it comes out. And when he described the situation of a well-known supermodel walking down the runway and then, and then ending in an explosion, I thought that was the most delightfully preposterous and funny thing I'd ever heard of. So I think I couldn't imagine who was not going to watch it. So I don't know that I really took it as seriously as to think it was creepy or scary or any of those things until I was in it in different ways, I think.
Does it transpire then when you're there? Do you think, oh, that was really creepy? Or is it like, oh, I see the technique behind it, so no, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, you know. I think it looks creepy when I watch it. It's very successful, but I think when we're doing it, we're not.
Were the two of you supposed to be like X-Files?
Mike Mulder and Scully?
I did have that question.
I said,
who's the science and who's the sort of mystical creature believer?
I
never really figured it out. We didn't really flesh that out. It was never.
I have not seen all of it, so I don't know if it could happen. But could these characters come back? Could they be?
Anything's possible, I guess.
Anything is possible. I mean, in this world, there's.
Yeah.
Have either of you come up against the idea of looks when they're casting? Do people talk about that at all or not? Do they say, "Yeah, you don't have the right look for this," or? Are looks not a problem anymore?
They certainly don't tell you.
I think we'll be on the point of it. But I think for sure we've all, as actors, been in situations where it's obvious that you're not right for something because you look a certain way and it makes more sense for someone who looks a different sort of way to play that character, no matter how well you might have played the part. You know, that's a reality of being an actor. That you have to deal with, and it can be complicated sometimes.
When you're doing this, do you start thinking, well, now do I need a little something here, or do I need to do whatever?
I think what the show is trying to say, and what's great about it is the message of, you know, individuality and the thing that makes you unique, and celebrating that and amplifying that and being confident in that. And that's a theme in a lot of Ryan Murphy shows, and especially obviously in this one.
Yeah.
So it's empowering, I think.
Then how close does it come to the substance?
I mean, the substance is in a long line of things that are dealing with. I mean, you go all the way back to, I don't know, Greek myths. There are Greek myths about this, you know. It's like there's a lot of stories that are like this, or like Cronenberg body horror predates the substance, and then you've got the substance. So I think it's in dialogue with all these things, and it's additive. But it's not. It isn't the substance. It has lots of relevance as well.
Still creeps me out. I just got to tell you that. But hey, you guys,
you're really like in the. I am free task space, aren't you?
The lights are quite on. This show is going. Can I tell you? I am not going to be alone on this one. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Bruce. Thanks for that interview. Ryan Murphy. He's got a real interesting, I guess, career in Hollywood. It feels like this is blending a few different series that he's done, you know, like the Nip Tuck, but also American Horror Story, you know, just kind of like a mixture of the various genres he's done.
Yeah, well, and I believe he's behind the John F. Kennedy Jr., Carolyn Bessette miniseries that's coming up as well. So he's not afraid to attack controversy.
Right.
He did the Monica Lewinsky story.
Mm-hmm.
But he also is giving you maybe the gossip that you didn't think you had,
right,
in some of these instances. And so it's fascinating. I bless him for doing it, because I don't know anybody else who would. They're very insular in Hollywood, where they don't want to talk about certain things. And he just broaches the subject. There it is. We're right out there, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah. So it's a fascinating limited series that it does come to a conclusion, because I was afraid we'd get to the end and then it's like, wait a minute, is there another season of this? But I think it does have an end point. So,
okay. Interesting.
So, and last week we talked that you had seen the Seven Kingdoms.
Right. Yeah. Seven Kingdoms. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was surprised that it wasn't like the Game of Thrones.
Right. Right. Very different. Very,
yeah,
very different. I mean, as we talked a little bit last week, you know, the first two series, both the original Game of Thrones and then House of the Dragon, it's very much about the nobility of Westeros, you know, the High Lords, the Kings, all of that. This is a very, very common. Yes. Like, he's a knight, but, you know, just barely kind of thing.
Right.
What were your thoughts?
I thought it was more accessible. You know, it was like, if I hadn't watched Game of Thrones, I would be able to understand who these people were and maybe find out who the rest of those other people were if I went back and tried to see Game of Thrones.
Sure, sure.
So I was intrigued, but I thought I don't think they spent the money like they do on the other ones.
No. And it's, I'm not sure what the end game is on it, but it has been confirm they are picking it up. There is a season two comes
right.
out next
You're
year
now.
Yeah, so it's you know, it's gonna be it will be back, so whether you like it or not, you're getting more of
yeah.
it. So which it does make me happy in a sense that they're willing to commit to something. Like they have, you know, you have this intellectual property. I think in some cases, like Disney in particular, with some of the Star Wars stuff they've done, you know, they had that show, The Acolyte, where it was a bit uneven at times, and then they canceled it. There was no season two, even though they kind of foreshadowed to some things to come. So it was frustrating that a show that, you know, it struggled, it was up and down, but it didn't get an opportunity to kind of straighten itself out, which maybe it could have. So it's good to see that with this one where, you know, it's a short season one. It's only about six episodes. They've just said, yeah, we're going to do season two regardless. And, you know, they've committed to it, which is good. I wish more shows would take a chance like that.
Yeah, well, and I think that's what gets people not to invest time
right.
into a series, because they think, well, they might just end it anyway, and so we wouldn't know how it ended as it was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I don't know if that's, well, I have gotten to see some other things.
Okay.
And I have to be careful, but I'm not spilling anything, so please don't infer. But I got to see the new Yellowstone spinoff.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put it that way, because I think it is made more for a broadcast audience than I was expecting.
Okay. Interesting.
And that, read into that what you will. And then I saw The Muppet Show.
Oh, okay.
And The Muppet Show, which premieres, I think, next week, is reminiscent of the old Muppet Show.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's as creative as the old Muppet Show.
Interesting.
But again, you read into that what you will.
Yeah. Wow. You know, here's an interesting thing, you know, with bringing shows back from kind of like the dead. Did you see Ted Lasso is coming back for season 4?
Yes. I've seen the ads and everything.
Yeah. This kind of came out of the blue. I mean, I think when season 3 wrapped, you had a sense that even though they said this was it, it had a, you had that sense where they could pick it up again. And maybe, I don't, did Jason Sudeikis just need a break or what?
I think that's, are you giving up on something that's a hit?
Right. And it was so good. But it looks interesting, you know, so he comes back and he's going to coach, I guess, the women's version of FC Richmond. So, you know, it's, you know, new, you know, the, most or all of the original cast is coming back. Plus they'll add in kind of a new cast. So it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think they felt that, you know, we do need a break.
Yep.
And I think they saw shows that, like The Bear, which is one that I love, that they're just going to go to the end, get 5 out of there, and then we're done.
Right.
Instead of maybe taking that creative break and coming back with new life to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Right.
I'm curious about it. But I'm waiting for that, because we need more comedies.
We do. We do. And you know, this weekend I had an opportunity to kind of get caught up as I'm trying to watch as many Oscar nominated things that I can. I saw one battle after another this weekend. That was crazy. I mean, I love Paul Thomas Anderson movies. So, you know, you always know you're going to get something that's a little bit offbeat and weird. And this is definitely, offbeat and weird, but also topical in the sense that, you know, you've got these revolutionaries,
right.
in kind of, you know, interesting times where they're, the movie starts with them busting out, migrants that are being held in a like detention facility on the border. But yeah, it was an interesting one. I mean, I wasn't expecting, what it was. I mean, it was fun for me start to finish. It was good. I liked it. I'll be curious to see what's that?
Was it his best?
No. I mean, There Will Be Blood, the one about the oil tycoon. To me, that is like his crowning achievement of, but he did that at the same time as, you know, the Coen brothers had their movie out that year.
So this is more like The Departed.
Yeah.
Where we're going to do a make good on the best picture.
Right.
Because we haven't done it to you before.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So
I don't think, though, it will win best picture. I think it will.
I think it has a really good chance. It's certainly, I would be shocked. I mean, again, Paul Thomas Anderson, now he's up to what, 16 career Oscar nominations with no wins. I have to think, like, with three nominations between screenplay, director, and best picture, he's going to get something. But, you know, what will it be, best director? Will it just be best picture? Or do they just, you know, cheap out and just say, like, screenplay, it was good? But
we've seen it where the director goes to one person and picture goes to another.
Yeah,
that's very common lately, and I wouldn't doubt that that could happen.
Right.
I am a hardcore fan of Hamnet,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that's going to be the spoiler. I think Sinners is the one that could be the one who wins.
Yeah, I'm going to try to watch that one this weekend because I think that one is also on either HBO or Netflix right now. I added it to my wish list, so it's on one of those platforms. I can't remember which.
Then did you rush out to get your action figures?
Yes. What's her name? Tiana Taylor. Right. Tiana Taylor hosted Saturday Night Live. And that may have been the only funny skit of the episode where they were talking about the action, you know, the kids action, the Paul Thomas Anderson line of action figures from a movie and how inappropriate they were. Very well done. And it was kind of ironic because I watched the movie the night before and then SNL the next day. But I don't know how you have felt. I know you're a big fan of SNL like I am. This season overall has just been bad. I don't know any other way to describe it, but and what's weird is that it's not like they completely gutted the cast and they're starting from scratch. It just feels like, you know, I thought a few of the people that departed after last season, like Egon Odom and Heidi Gardner, I don't think those were good decisions. And it just, I don't know. It just feels stale. The show feels really, really stale right now.
There, it was his name, Michael Longfellow.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him too. And he yep. was another one that they dumped.
Yep.
But you know, what's happened is they have far too many episodes that involve people sitting around a table.
Right.
Or they might have game shows.
Yep.
What happened to them doing a spoof of something that's in the zeitgeist?
Right.
You know, when talking about whatever, why aren't they doing that as a spoof?
Mm-hmm.
And they did a little thing. Was it the Trump Awards at the beginning?
Right.
But that, again, and we've talked about this before, that opening thing should not always be political.
Right.
And every week it's a political thing and I don't want it.
No.
And especially this last week when there was a lot of concern by people about the shooting in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. That it's not, you know, I couldn't laugh and I wouldn't laugh.
Right.
And so I think they need to take a pulse of what the country is out there and realize that sometimes we need the escape.
Yeah. So this is an interesting thing because it sort of dawned on me, but I don't recall the last time a cold open wasn't political Trump related. I mean, it's been at least two full seasons. I don't remember. I mean, there was a time, right? Like there was a time in SNL where they wouldn't touch politics in the cold open, correct?
Right. But I think there was one this year where they didn't do it. And I don't know what the reason was, but it was, I welcomed it.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to always be confronted with that. And then they kind of figured they're done with that. Or mm-hmm. if they revive it for the news, then they're okay. But hold it.
Right.
You know?
I mean, and we have, look, there's a long history on SNL, whether it's Phil Hartman doing Bill Clinton, Dana Carvey doing George Bush. They've been doing that forever. And there's no reason they should stop. And I think James Austin Johnson does a nice job as
right.
Trump. And I think, you know, he nails it pretty well. But I don't need it every single week. We can like escape from politics every once in a while.
Well, and where are those characters that we used to see that were created by their actors,
right,
or their performance? That we don't, you know, let's bring back, name one. I mean, there isn't anyone.
There's right. We don't have like Wayne's World anymore. We don't have a Matt Foley motivational speaker anymore. We occasionally, what's that?
The Target woman that Kristen Wiig
right.
used to play.
Right. I mean, I think the closest we had maybe was last year when they brought, was it Domingo?
And he got on like two or three times.
Right.
Yeah.
That was that was one of the last times that I could think of where they really did a skit kind of over and over again. I think the closest we've had this season is twice they've done those cartoons, Brad and his dad, which have been kind of funny for me. And then they've twice done, because it was with, was it with Ariana Grande? Or no, it was the podcast.
Podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So that, that's been funny. And I get a kick out of both of those, the Brad and the dad and the podcasters. I laugh at those because it gets at kind of cultural things that I see with my kids, you know, like, yeah, like they call the podcasters, they call the oldest, you know, the one that's like 13, where the rest of them are 12. They refer to him as Unc because he's old. Right. And like my kids, they'll have a friend that's older than them, even though they're all freshmen. But that one freshman that's older than them, they refer to as Unc. So it's like, these are real things. These are words that kids are using today. But, you know, so I can kind of, I can connect to this. But beyond that, I mean, I feel like every episode is just bad. You know, I can get into Weekend Update is basically the only thing I laugh at these days. It's not good.
And I'm tired of Weekend Update. I think the format is too stale, where you know they'll do a couple of banters with their back and forth with the things, mm-hmm, and then they'll bring on one of the new kids who doesn't get a lot of time,
right,
to create a character that maybe will stick or maybe will be gone.
Right.
And then if they really need to dig, they'll bring back somebody from one of the old casts,
yep,
and ask them to play something that they've done before too.
Right.
So I wish that were a little less predictable. I think the best thing they've done is have Colin Jost as the Secretary of Defense.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
It shows that he has more talent than just sitting there and laughing about jokes that include his wife.
Right, you know? Exactly, yeah, yeah.
I wish they'd take another look at it, because I'm in. I will be there every Saturday night,
yeah,
because it's tradition for me.
Right.
But I know that they're not getting new people at all.
No. It's the show is getting stale, and it almost feels like we might be getting to a point where maybe we are witnessing the last season or close to it. You know, is when Lorne steps down, is this thing going to die with him, or is there somebody that's going to take it over? I don't know.
Will Tina Fey do it?
Right.
You know, and she's been pretty quiet lately, so maybe she is thinking about it,
yeah,
and she is making some plans. I don't know, but she would be good,
yeah,
because she does catch it. Look at how she was able to do Sarah Palin.
Right.
And they were on the edge of those kinds of things, where I think it would be fun to see other people in our world being lampooned.
Right.
It shouldn't just be Trump.
Right.
And so that's where I think she would bring that in. And there was a woman that she did this last year. Did she do Kristi Noem?
Yes, I think she did.
And I did not know it was Tina Fey until after the skit was over. And I thought, well, that was good. She did a good job with that.
Yeah.
But we'll see, you know?
Yeah.
But look at the rest of television. Where are your humor spots? We need more of them. We need to laugh.
We do. We do. It's been rough. It's a rough patch, you know, so hopefully Ted Lasso will be back and will give us an opportunity to smile a little bit. But yeah, it's an interesting time on TV.
Well, YouTube has been running lately a lot of old episodes of the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back and you remember what that time was, and they hold up. They really do. Even though, you know, they're sitting there at typewriters and, you know, it's a different kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could do a television kind of setting and capture what we're seeing today on TV.
Yeah.
I think it would be fascinating to see that. But the Mary Tyler Moore Show, if you ever need a break from all that, go watch some of those old episodes, because they're very good. Very, very funny.
Well, there you go.
And you see a different world than what you, it was a different Minneapolis.
Sure.
And I knew that Minneapolis very well. And I remember that was an aspirational place.
Mm.
It was like, I don't know if it was the same for you, because you didn't grow up in this part of the Midwest, but if you could make it in Minneapolis, you had made it. Right. And I remember talking to Tom Brokaw at one time, and he said his goal was always to be on a station in Minneapolis. He never thought anything beyond, you know, like that was the ultimate. To be an anchor of a network TV broadcast, no, he wasn't into that. Yeah. But it happened. So he got better than Minneapolis, but maybe Minneapolis was still a goal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, growing up out east, you know, you always thought about like making it in New York, right? The same idea.
Right.
Because
if you're
in the suburbs, you want to get to the city, right? So if you're in like northern Indiana or somewhere in Illinois, you're probably thinking like, I got to get to Chicago, right? You know, if you're in the suburbs, you want to get into LA. And I think that's kind of it.
New York is always the ultimate, for even now.
Yeah.
Where you go, if I can make it in New York, I can make it.
Right.
And I don't know necessarily that we're seeing those kinds of people who are elevated to anchor status on news shows.
Mm-hmm.
Who have kind of paid their dues to get there. I think it's suddenly like, who is this person? Look at the three anchors on the nightly news. David Muir is the one with any kind of longevity.
Right. Yeah. I can't even name who's on, you know, who's anchoring these days.
Yamas on NBC. And then on CBS is the one who's in trouble.
Right. Yeah. But there was a time, you know, when it would be like, oh yeah, Peter Jennings and
Walter Cronkite,
Tom Brokaw, and Dan Rather. Exactly. You know, you knew.
I remember Hundley Brinkley. So there it tells you how old I go back.
There you go.
But, you know, you knew what you were getting because you knew those people. You've seen them so many nights in your home. These guys, wasn't he a correspondent last week wearing a jacket for another network? I think that's where some of those ones come from.
Yeah.
They jump from network to network. But
right.
Anyway, you know, that's why we need breaks.
Yep.
That's why we need something else to look forward to. Bring on the comedies.
Exactly. Well, on that note, thank you again for listening, and we'll be back again next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed. Shop now for a limited time. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.